Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Amy. How are things in this rainy Atlanta morning?
You know, I love the rain. I had a meeting this morning, a breakfast meeting at the Flying Biscuit. It was pouring down rain, and I was soaking wet. And the person I had breakfast with said, "Where's your umbrella?" I don't believe in umbrellas.
That's it.
I love the rain.
Nice.
Yeah. So now I'll just be a little soggy all day, but that's okay. Love the rain. And we kind of need it, I think, too. We haven't had rain in a while.
Yeah, but it's been every day now.
Yeah, scattered showers. My garden's doing great.
Good.
Yeah. I should be bringing you cucumbers and tomatoes.
That's right. You should. Make a note next week.
I will. And for those listeners that are hungry or just love to eat or want to try something different, we have a great guest this morning to talk about Taste of Asia. Two guests, actually. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Ken Katz and Chi-Chi Chin Chang. Welcome.
Good morning.
We're very happy to be here.
Did I say that right? Your name's a little tricky.
Yes, Chechi.
Okay, Chechi. Well, tell us a little bit about Taste of Asia and your involvement and what folks could expect if they came. How about you, Ken? You want to start?
Sure. Taste of Asia is an association of Asian-themed restaurants throughout the city of Atlanta that are offering a dine-out week from August 10th through 16th. Restaurants are going to feature full-course menus from $19 to $28. In honor of the week, this coming Wednesday, 1 week from today, at Macy's in Lenox Square, we're having a grand tasting where guests can come and sample food from all the restaurants. Tickets are $1 per food ticket.
Oh, that sounds good. So you can get a sneak peek before and then know if you really want to go.
That's right. Plus, you can jump from one restaurant to another instead of driving all around. Unlike Midtown Week or Downtown Week, these restaurants are spread all the way up into northern Gwinnett County down to downtown.
And how did it start? This isn't the first year for Taste of Asia.
No, we started last year. Last year was the first time we do this event. This event, the goal and the purpose is to provide a platform for both Georgia Restaurant Association, Asian restaurant members, and the Atlanta public, a great place for both parties to meet with each other, not only to promote Asian cuisine, but also promote Asian culture. Mm-hmm. At the same time, through this event, to promote Atlanta become the true international, diversified, energetic metropolitan city.
So a lot of thought has been put around this. I know that on the website you can go and even look at the menus and really get a good flavor for where you might be visiting. Was there a restaurant group that started it? I mean, what was the
How did you all get together and decide to do this?
To begin with, this is myself, Chechi, from Grand China Restaurant, and Anna Xu from Silk Restaurant meet with our vice president, Deborah. Deborah, she's the vice president for the Georgia Restaurant Association. Mm-hmm. Last year, we were sitting at my restaurant and talking about how to promote Asian restaurant and culture to Atlanta public, and also at the same time to promote Atlanta city to become a true international big city. And then we come up this idea, maybe we should do the Taste of Asia as an annual event. Mm-hmm. And we start from last year. This is the second year we do it.
Now, aren't most Asian restaurants like kind of family owned?
I would say 95% of the Asian restaurants are still mom and pop, entrepreneur restaurant.
Now, were they open to all coming together? Because it seems like a pretty competitive market.
That's the idea behind the tasting, was showing the unity of the restaurants in the community and how even if they're technically all competitors, that we can all come together for an event to forward the whole idea of the Asian restaurant community to the Atlanta community.
Because if someone likes Asian food, to try multiple restaurants, so you really aren't competing in some ways. But then when you look at the list of folks that are participating too, it's pretty wide as far as the price range and the experience as well. I mean, some people for fast casual like Doc Choi's and some of the other options I see on your list. How did you come up with the participants?
We usually approach our Asian restaurant folks through personal relationship, through our Georgia Restaurant Association network, and also through newspaper, you know, I did a lot of promotion through Chinese Asian newspaper and tried to introduce our event to community and urge them to join.
Now, do you have more participants this year than last year?
We have more participants to do the dine out week. We has fewer restaurant participants to do the tasting at Macy's this year.
How many will be at Macy's?
There will be 23 at Macy's.
Wow.
There are 34 doing Dine Out Week.
Wow, but that's great to be able to taste from 24 restaurants. And like you said, all in one spot.
Right.
I love things like that. You know,
yeah,
I do, Lee.
I know.
Anytime I can go and taste, I love to eat.
So. We expect to see you there, so it'll be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us again, when is that and where, and do people need to get tickets in advance, or can they just show up?
They can get tickets in advance at tasteofasiaweek.com or at Macy's Lenox Square, which is where the event is going to be held.
Okay.
They can also purchase tickets day of. The event starts at 5:30 on August 5th at Macy's again. And we're charging a $10 charge if you buy your tickets in advance. That will give you 10 $1 tasting tickets.
Okay.
And then the dishes will be variant in price at each restaurant's booth.
So, in other words, there's no charge for the admission fee.
Mm-hmm.
The $10 ticket they buy, they get $10 worth of the food coupon.
Right.
To buy food. We don't believe we want to make money through this event. What we do is just to cover the cost.
Right.
And also we make it very fair price and reasonable for the majority of people can go.
Now, what are the price range of the tastes at each restaurant, do you know?
It's going to start at $1, mm-hmm. and it's going to range as high as we've left it open-ended, but from in discussion with the restaurants, it seems like it's going to be no higher than $5.
It's $3. The highest is $3.
Okay.
The reason why we do this because we want the audience will be able to have a chance to sample as many restaurants as possible.
And you're probably all bringing your specialties, too. So you're going to bring what might be a favorite item on the menu. What a win-win for people that like to eat to come out and to be able to sample and try. Ken, how did you get involved? Are you looks like you're a general manager of a restaurant.
Yeah. The Georgia Restaurant Association has tried to approach as many different restaurants and different demographics as possible. And, you know, like Chechi mentioned, 95% of their Asian restaurants in the community are family-owned. And so she wanted some overview and visit representation from restaurants that are not family-owned. And so we were one of those that were asked to join to participate. And the Geisha House is owned out of Los Angeles. So
okay. Well, terrific. We hope everybody will come out and join
right.
y'all
and
at Macy's.
And what's, again, the website?
Tasteofasiaweek.com.
That's easy enough. Wonderful. Y'all, thanks so much for being with us today. We hope our listeners will come to Macy's or engage in the Taste of Asia Week.
Thank you.
We're ready to go.
Are you? Good.
Yes.
Good. All this talk of food, though, does
make me
hungry.
I know. Now I'm hungry.
Makes me hungry this early in the morning. Well, thank you. Thanks for being with us today. Next up, this gentleman definitely gets the award for the coolest business card. I really like this business card. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. From Matchstick, we have Craig Johnson. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Matchstick, it's a cool name, cool little business card, went to the website. It's extremely creative. Tell us a little bit about Matchstick and how you got involved.
Well, Matchstick, we are a brand identity house, so we help companies and organizations define their brand, develop a brand strategy around that, and then essentially design that actual visual external brand for that organization.
And branding is so important. We talk about that a lot. The guests that come in and out, some people, it's just obvious they've got a cool brand, and other people get kind of lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe give us some key tips to branding yourself?
Well, I would say the first thing to understand about a brand is that you're not in control of your brand. And a lot of people say, well, people don't understand who we are and everybody else has it wrong. Well, that's your fault. That's not their fault. And your goal is to communicate clearly who you are. And then once you hear everybody else saying it right, then you know that you've got it right.
Right. It's one of those things that whether you're doing it or not, you're doing it.
Exactly. I mean, it's really like a personal reputation,
right?
But more on a corporate side.
Now, how is that when you're communicating with your clients? How do they get that right away, or are they kind of stubborn in that what do you mean? This is how we are. This is what we look like. This is our brand.
Well, I would say most people that we work with, they're coming to us because they already recognize that there's some sort of branding problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say that they, you know, don't necessarily know how to go about it. And one of the first things I say is listen to your customers.
Right.
What do your customers say about you?
But how do you listen to your customers?
A lot of times it's just picking up the phone and calling them. Mm-hmm. And or a lot of – it depends on what type of business you're in. So you can either call them or you can just sit around and listen to what they say. And by listening, a lot of times right now, that can just be surfing the web. And what are people saying online about whether they're reviewing your products or whether they're talking on blogs about you or – and if they're saying a lot of bad things, instead of trying to figure out how to shut down what they're saying, try to engage in the conversation and figure out a way to turn that around.
Right. Now, is that something you help your clients with?
No, we encourage people to really – we don't work a ton on the doing that kind of research for them.
Right.
But they kind of come to the table understanding who their customers are and how their customers see them. And then we can help, say, given those perceptions, we can help kind of develop a strategy around how to try to turn this thing around.
Now, do you prefer working with people from scratch, like brand new companies or existing ones and then rebranding them?
We work with both, and there's different strategies with both. You know, it's always a little bit easier to, you know, build a house from scratch than to rebuild a house. So,
right.
But a lot of times, you know, houses need to be rebuilt and brands need to be, right. You know, rebranded. So
when should a company rebrand?
I would say that, you know, a company should rebrand a lot of times when they're one of two things. Either when they realize that, you know, what represents them, it doesn't really represent them the right way, the mm-hmm. way that they are. Or, and a lot of times there's a change in vision for the company and there's a change in direction. And
right.
so with that comes the need to kind of visually change that as well.
Right.
I mean, the easiest thing, you think back to history and countries when there's a big change, you know, when communism goes down, you know, they need to change their country flag to stand for something different. And
right.
it's no different in the business world.
How about, can you give us maybe some examples or products that have successfully branded themselves against their competition?
Well, one of the key principles of branding is differentiation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people sit around trying to talk about, hey, we want to be better. We want to be better. Well, it's an easier and much more effective strategy to just be different. So one of my favorite examples in recent history is what Nintendo did when, you know, they were obviously a powerhouse in the 80s, and then Sony came along and eventually Microsoft came along, and they were just killing it in the gaming space.
Right,
in the
console.
Yeah.
Right.
And so Nintendo obviously was losing the battle of graphics and that whole game. And so rather than try to fight the same fight, they said, we're going to do something completely different. It's a completely different gaming experience. And so now they've created the Wii, which everybody that owns an Xbox or a PlayStation, they own a Wii also.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of trying to be better than those two, they just said, we're going to be complementary and different.
Well, that's interesting. And there are so many companies like that where, you know, the brand has been around a long time, but it does
mm-hmm.
change. It is interesting. So how was Matchstick founded?
Basically, it was founded by myself and Blake Howard, who is our creative director. And essentially, we were both kind of too dumb to know any better, I would say. And we had a lot of drive and a lot of energy and thought, hey, we can do this. And we kind of very much, you know, bootstrapped the whole thing, but have learned a lot along the way.
So you started out as a branding house?
Well, we started out really more as a typical design firm and, you know, really had to walk ourselves through the branding process even. Because I would say that our industry in general, people that go consult on branding a lot of times have a hard time finding a focus. And focus is another one of those key components of branding. And so we said, hey, we can't just be the do-it-all design firm. We got to actually practice what we preach.
She said pick one.
Yeah, exactly. And we said, hey, what are we really, you know, the whole kind of Jim Collins hedgehog thing of like, what are we really passionate about? What can we be best in the world at? And we kind of really kind of honed our focus in more on the brand identity side.
So you talk about the Matchstick brand. I mean, your business card, your website, everything, your brand is very cool. So what are some of the steps you've taken just how, you know, branding your business? How long has it taken to evolve to that?
Well, it's definitely taken time. And, you know, one of the things that we talk a lot about is demonstrate, don't just declare. And it's one of the things that we've tried to do is rather than, you know, tell everybody about how to do branding, just demonstrate it ourselves. And we try to build it into everything that we do to the fact that my wife laughs at me because my luggage is the same color as our company. And, you know, we just try to build it into all areas.
Right, to integrate it into everything. Now, and that's a good lesson for your clients as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about your HR policy. I mean, it's got to be really hard to find good, talented people. How do you get folks to come on board and support the brand?
Well, kind of, you know, along with our strategic focus on the brand identity, you know, half of what we do is the actual visual designing the brand identity. But the other half is focusing on the strategy. And so we don't just look for people that are great designers, but we look for people that are smart designers and understand the core concepts of branding and understand how to walk a client through that process of really consulting them on designing their brand strategy and then turning around and actually designing the visual brand.
Now, is this something that you can create that tight of a process on, where there are certain steps that you can follow in order to get a good brand at the end of the day?
Yeah, we have kind of a five-step process that there's wiggle room within each one of them, and every client we work with is different, but we take every single one through the same process. We've worked with people that essentially are marketing to, you know, kids that are 2 years old, to marketing to an executive at a Fortune 500 company, but it's the same principles and process that leads to different results.
When you look at some of the folks that you've designed brand identities for, such as the WNBA, the Atlanta Dream, Clint Black, John Mayer, Lynyrd Skynyrd, I mean, you look at that as well as rebranding Atlanta School for Dyslexia and the Swift School, that's a pretty broad range of clients.
Yeah, it is. And that's what's interesting. A lot of times people coming in, they think, well, you haven't, you know, worked on a school for dyslexia before, so how is this going to
So they only work with agencies that have? So that's probably a short list.
Right. Well, and I've seen in our industry, too, there's kind of different types of companies. There are companies that provide a long list of services to a very niche type of company, or we're more the niche type service to a broad range of clients.
Right.
But again, it's the same process that always leads to very different results.
That's a great way of saying it, too. So John Mayer, though, I got to ask, did you meet John Mayer in the process of working
with him? I
didn't.
We actually worked with John Mayer on, he put together an event for his fans called the Mayercraft Carrier. That there's a company in town called Sixth Man that they do a lot of these really unique events for artists and their fans. And so he definitely lived up the full experience of being on that boat for 4 days, though, that's for sure. So it was a lot of fun.
I bet. Any final thoughts for our listeners? Just branding is so important. Do you prefer
any book? How about a book resource for them to share?
The best book, and another great thing about this book is you can probably read it in 2.5 hours, but is a book called Zag by Marty Neumeier. And the whole concept of the book is when everyone zigs, you got to zag, which is really back to that whole differentiation thing. So it's a great, quick, easy read. And a lot of times I'll have clients read it before we start the process with them because it gives them a good understanding of a lot of the branding principles.
Terrific. I just have to comment on this because on your website it does a really good job of painting a picture of who you are. Tell us about the shoes. You love getting new shoes.
I just like getting new shoes. And I could wear a black t-shirt and jeans every day, but I'd love to have a new pair of shoes every day. So
I love it. A man after my own heart.
There you go.
I'm a shoe person myself. And as you can see, I've taken mine off right now. Wonderful. Thanks so much for being with us today.
For having
me. I mean, we want our listeners to know how to reach you too, and your website's fantastic. So give us that website one time.
Yeah, you can go to matchstick.com, and that does not have a K on the end of it. So just matchstick.com.
And do you work with companies of all sizes?
We do. We work with startups. We work with organizations up to 10,000 people down to the single entrepreneur startup.
Terrific. Thanks for being our guest this morning.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
We hope our listeners will reach out and contact you and find out more about how they can brand themselves. You definitely have it down. Thank you. Next up, Lee, we're shifting gears, but we want our listeners to stay till the end of the show. We want them to listen because we've got a special treat at the end. Next up, we have Steve, and not that you're not a treat, mm-hmm. Steve.
Oh, I
know no. Next up, from Rourke Capital, we have the managing director. And Steve, I'll let you pronounce your last name.
Romanello.
You know,
it's
not
that hard.
Well, Romanello, when he said it, I just kept thinking, doesn't it sound like it would be something tasty to eat? And now
there
I can't get that
it's
out of my head.
Because of the Asia week.
Exactly. Steve, tell us about Rourke Capital.
Okay. Rourke Capital Group is a private equity firm that's based here in Atlanta. And we focus on mid-market companies, primarily in the franchise business. And our investments include right now a bunch of names that your folks here in Atlanta would hopefully know and appreciate. Moe's Southwest Grill, Schlotzky's Deli, Cinnabon Cinnamon Rolls, Carvel Ice Cream, Primrose Schools being one outside of the food industry. And we've been here since 2001 and are actively looking for additional investments in primarily the franchise industry as an area of focus for us, but in a broad range of industries as well.
So most equity firms or finance companies are based in other areas, not necessarily Atlanta. What brought Rourke to Atlanta?
Well, our founding partner and managing partner is a gentleman named Neil Aronson, and Neil was here in Atlanta. He was the co-founder of another Atlanta-based franchise system called U.S. Franchise Systems, which owned a couple of hotel brands called Microtel Inns and Suites and Hawthorne Suites. And when that company was ultimately sold, Neil founded Rourke Capital Group here in Atlanta, primarily because that's where he was, but also because the environment here in Atlanta is a great one from a business standpoint. Notwithstanding the issues that the region is facing today, it's been a great 20 years, and we believe it'll be a great 20 years in this region going forward. Additionally, Rourke is, Craig talked a little bit about differentiation, and I would tell you that Rourke is very different than most private equity firms. And we are not what you would consider to be a typical New York investment firm. And we felt like us being in Atlanta was just a way to emphasize some of those differences that I hope we'll talk about in a bit.
Okay. Why don't we talk about it now? What are some of the differentiating factors?
Well, I think Rourke is different in a number of ways. Not unique. There are a lot of other firms that do this. But when you think of a typical New York private equity firm, you might have certain negative connotations that immediately come to mind. Rourke is different in a lot of respects. One, we have an operating background and an operating focus. So we understand and appreciate the value of culture, not only in the companies that we acquire, but at Rourke as well. Longer term in our thinking. Most private equity firms are really turning their investments or 1 or 2 years. Our first investment was in 2001, and we still own that investment today and plan on owning it for many more years to come. So we have a longer term approach. We also spend an awful lot of time worrying about making sure that the management teams that we are working with have the ability to execute the business plan without worrying about things on the periphery. So we have always taken a very conservative approach to capital structure. We're not heavy users of debt. So a lot of these companies that you're hearing right now are getting into trouble, not because their business isn't sound at a very granular level, but more because they have this burden of extraordinary amounts of debt that they have to deal with, and we make sure that our companies are not burdened with that debt. And I think that's also a pretty different factor as well.
What are some of the trends that you're seeing right now as far as private equity is concerned?
Well, the availability of leverage and mm-hmm. the price of that leverage is probably the biggest change over the last year. It's far more expensive. It's a lot harder to get. And what that has done is that has caused a lot of the purchase price multiples to decrease, and it's also caused the transaction volume to decrease. A lot less deals are getting done. They're getting done at lower prices, primarily because many of our competitors have been able to buy their companies with the assumption that they were going to get a great deal of leverage to put on those companies.
Now, is your company, you think, more stable because you go after the franchises and you're in for kind of a longer-term relationship with recurring income, rather than these that are just trying to go public with companies and get in and get out?
Well, we like the franchise business for a lot of reasons. First of all, we really believe strongly in the business model. So we invest in both franchisors and also franchisees. And that's an important distinction. We believe in both sides of it very strongly. And we like the fact that it is not a very capital-intensive business, and we like the fact that there are recurring income streams that are generally controlled through longer-term contracts. Certainly those are things that we like. But we really like the spirit of entrepreneurs mm-hmm. that are our partners. And we find now that we're doing more and more business. Something like 80% of our portfolio is currently invested in entrepreneurs and families and their businesses who are looking for ways to grow their business or looking for a partial liquidity event and looking for a cultural fit as well as a financial partner. And we really enjoy those types of relationships, enjoy all that that embodies and symbolizes, and we've had some good success in doing that.
Now, with the downturn in the housing, how did that impact the franchise business? Because don't a lot of people use their home as their major source of capital to start that?
Well, there have been. Now, we generally, we're very, very involved in the franchise industry. So many of us are involved in the International Franchise Association. Many of us at RORC have certified franchise executive degrees. So we are heavily involved. However, our emphasis from an investment standpoint has generally been at the mid to upper end of franchising, where the investment levels are generally would lead you to doing business with business people who are more like companies or a bit more well-heeled than someone who might be starting a lower-cost franchise who might mm-hmm. mortgage their home in order to provide that equity. Not that it hasn't happened at all in our systems, but generally speaking, that's not what we have been reliant on. Our franchisees, though, however, have been hit by the credit crunch, and they're having difficulty finding reasonable debt terms in order to grow their businesses.
Now, do you think that you guys are kind of a leading indicator when the economy is turning around, when those people are more flush and ready to invest more in franchising?
I think we're a leading indicator based on the industries that we are participating in. So the restaurant business is typically a leading indicator, as an example. We're usually the first one into a recession and hopefully the first one out when discretionary mm-hmm. income mm-hmm. starts to pick up, people start to eat out more and enjoy themselves. So I don't think it's as much as a result of us being in franchising, but more about the sectors that we've invested in through mm-hmm. this model of franchising.
Who's your target market? It sounds like entrepreneurs, but do you have a target market in mind?
Yeah, you know, it's entrepreneurs, and it is family-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of business in the Southeast, but it are those. And we're finding that now more than ever, these folks, these entrepreneurs, are really looking for investment partners who understand their business, who have an operating focus, who appreciate the culture. There's a cultural fit or a style fit. And the lessons of the last few years have taught them to also look for a partner who is not a big, heavy user of debt. So as a result of this, and also the fact that we were fortunate enough to raise about $1 billion just last year and have a great amount of that still available to invest, that and the fact that we have that investment availability has caused our pipeline for new investments to be greater than it's been in many, many years. And we're very excited about the next couple of years.
How can our listeners reach you? A website or contact information?
Yeah, you could reach me directly at steve.r@rorkcapital.com, and Rourke is R-O-A-R-K. Or you can go onto our website and reach any of our investment professionals through www.rorkcapital.com.
Any final thoughts for our listeners?
You know, it's a tough time out there right now, and I think that as business people, what I would say, I think I liked a lot of what Craig said about being an outlier, about being differentiated. But now more than ever, I think, is an opportunity for a lot of these small businesses to differentiate themselves and to take advantage of this market downturn. And, in fact, some of the companies that we're looking at right now are strong, stable companies who are looking at us and saying, hey, if I just had a little bit more money, I'd really be able to capitalize on the opportunities with lower rents and better, more favorable terms in a lot of areas. And for all of your listeners, I'd encourage them to kind of try to see the glass half full. It's not all bad that's going on right now, and there are still some opportunities in the market to capitalize on.
Thank you. That's great advice. Thanks for being with us today. Lee, definitely, last but not least, I get the giggles when I looked at this website. We have Evelyn Ann Johnston from Clever Twist, and Clever Twist is so cool. My son and I were looking at it, and he said, you know, I would love to work at something like that. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Evelyn Ann.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, Clever Twist has a lot of clever things, but I got to ask you. First of all, tell us what you do.
Well, I work with a fantastically creative woman named Jen Gordon, who's actually the head of our company. And we develop iPhone apps. and we try to make them a little bit irreverent and a little bit clever, as the name comes from. But we sell them in the iTunes store, and they range from games to more sort of productivity tools to just sort of, as you can see on our website, just sort of things for fun.
So new ways to reach your audience through irresistible iPhone applications, and they are highly addictive. I will tell you, I don't have an iPhone, and that's why. I don't think I would ever work. I'd be playing, but I love to play with my sons. Tell us about some of the applications that are recent.
Well, one of the first releases was a application called Yo Mama, which is literally a sort of encyclopedia of Yo Mama jokes. And one of the exciting things about that application is that we actually teamed with a group called Bottle Cap Development that is a fantastic development company that really specializes in all of these different areas. And so they actually developed a Facebook app that works along with the iPhone app, so that people who are using it on their iPhone can then paste. I mean, it's a little bit silly, but it's just pasting jokes and passing them to your friends and being able to post them on your Facebook page or have them on your iPhone. And so that was a fun one that we got a little bit of traction on, which was nice.
I bet you did get a lot of traction with the Yo Mama. I'm always hearing the Yo Mama jokes from my son, because some of these things have a light version and then they have an enhanced. Can you talk a little bit about that? You just tease us with the light version? Is that it?
Basically. Okay. No, the idea of a light version is to allow a customer to sort of see what they're getting before they pay the 99 cents or $1.99 for the application. The nice thing with the App Store is that anything that you're interested in, you can generally find a light or a free version of it. Mm-hmm. Often those have a few less features, or if it's a game, maybe a few less levels or something like that. So the goal is that if you really love it, if you find an app that's really well designed and really well made, then you're going to be willing to throw a couple of dollars out to get the full version. But it's a good accountability, I think, for designers, because it means that you can't just make things that are worthless. You have to make things that actually have some quality to them, because people aren't going to pay the money if they don't actually have some design merit.
The coffee spot. I mean, some of your applications are just for fun, but the coffee spot is really helpful. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the great things about Coffee Spot, the concept of the application is you push one button and it tells you the probably 10 or 20 closest places to where you are on the map to find a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. So it's a very simple idea. One thing that makes ours a little bit different from a few other applications that are sort of like that is that it's literally one touch. You don't have to go through any directories. You don't have to type in your address. You just push one button and the map pops up and tells you exactly where you should go. So if you're with your kids, or if you're, you know, running errands, or if you're running in between business meetings, it's just a very simple way to find the closest cup of coffee.
Now, is that an app that you guys develop for yourselves, or is that like a company developed that because they wanted to tie in with coffee shops?
We actually did that for ourselves. We're definitely interested in the future with working with companies who might be interested in tie-ins. The idea behind the Spot applications is that it will be a series. We haven't yet determined what the next one will be, but the hope is that there would be an ice cream spot and a hamburger spot and a donut
pizza,
spot,
right,
and pizza and salad, or, you know, anything like that people want to find quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would definitely be open to partnering with companies. We haven't done that yet, though.
Now, are companies approaching you because they want you to make apps for them?
We've had a few meetings with some different groups that are interested in development, and that's one of the areas that we're really trying to focus on. We feel right now the market is new enough that there are a lot of companies that could really benefit from having a presence in the iTunes store and on the iPhone. And companies, I think, are starting to realize that that's sort of where things are going.
Do you exclusively work with iPhone apps, or do you do Android and
Currently, we only do iPhone apps. We felt like it was really the best idea to just be as great as
focus
we could at one thing. I think that there's definitely a chance that in the future we might expand to BlackBerry or Android or some of the other platforms.
I've got to ask about beer goggles. I love finding out if your drinking is impairing your thinking. Tell us about beer goggles.
Well, again, it's a little irreverent, but I think the idea is that you actually can take a picture with your iPhone, and based on the phone itself has a concept in it where when you move it, the iPhone can tell. And so with taking a photo, you can shake it or sort of twist it or move it around, and it'll actually distort the photo that you've taken just in sort of different interesting ways that that you can't really expect. And it's just sort of a take on the old expression of beer goggles, the fact that things don't really look the way you think they do when you're out at a bar with your friends or that sort of thing.
Now, when you come up with the ideas for these apps, is this something that you all do in-house, or do you get kind of your users and fans help you with suggestions?
It's a little bit of both. I think that, again, Jen Gordon has to take pretty much all of the credit for most of the concepts. She definitely takes suggestions from her friends, from people that she knows. We do get a fair amount of feedback from the apps that we have out. The people write in and say things that they would like to see us do, and we're definitely very open to listening to those things, because the whole point of creating these is that people would enjoy
them and use them.
Right, exactly. So if there's a good idea out there, we're happy to listen to it.
And how long does it take to create an app from scratch?
It definitely depends. It depends a lot on the development. It can be anywhere from 1 month to 1 year, depending on what kind of features you really want. An interesting thing with developing iPhone apps is that you really have to have a good developer who can explain to you what works and what doesn't, because sometimes even people who have a web background and know some about design, it's different on the platform of the iPhone.
Right.
And things that you might think are really simple might take a developer 4 months, and something you might think is really hard might take a developer 2 days.
Right.
So it's a lot of just give and take and listening to your developers and working with them.
So if any of our listeners are looking for new ways and creative ways to reach their audience through these iPhone applications, how can they reach you?
You can reach me at Evelyn Ann, which is EvelynAnne, at clevertwist.com, or sorry, at aclevertwist.com. Again, Jen Gordon is Jen at aclevertwist.com. Also, our website is www.aclevertwist.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Evelyn Ann. And so I actually get a good amount of feedback from there as well, which that's a fun community to be a part of.
I bet. We'll have to have you on in another 6 months and see the fun things that you've been up to.
It's an interesting industry to be a part of right now. There's a lot of really exciting things going on.
I love it. Thank you so much for being with us today. Lee, a great show. We're running out of time.
I know. Once again.
Yes. Until next week. Actually, 2 more weeks, because I'm going to be out of town.
That's right. Do you have a guest?
Yes. Chichi Okudzi is coming next week. She's filling in for me and a lot of other great guests. And you can think of me as I have no cell phone service or anything where I'm going.
It's like you're in the studio.
Exactly. Doing a big hike. So I'll come back refreshed and just full of fresh air, I'm sure.
Great.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Amy Otto for the Atlanta Business Radio Show.